Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. The crux of this show today, folks, is a very interesting question. And that question is, has the Bloodline storyline become too big for the WWE's own good? And I know there's going to be a lot of people that say, well, I mean, this has been the one storyline that has really been compelling and has drawn fans to the product, and obviously the WWE is lucky to have it, and I agree with all that. But I think we've reached a point now where we may be seeing that this storyline has actually gotten to be bigger than the WWE itself. And the WWE is in panic mode a little bit when it comes to how do we wrap this up? How do we kill the golden goose? Because the fans are absolutely right. The Bloodline storyline has been impeccable. And it's been one that has been so well-received by fans and so well-received by critics that they realize when this comes to an end, we don't have anything to replace it. And I think they're starting to realize, well, when we took Sammy and Kevin out of it, all of a sudden their popularity started to wane a little bit. And we're terribly worried about what's going to happen because now they're sticking them back in it, if you notice. So I'm thinking to myself, what happens when the Bloodline storyline does come to an end? And it's inevitably going to come to an end, probably sooner rather than later. And you're going to have the feuds between what I would assume would be the Usos and Solo and Roman. And you're probably going to see Roman disappear for a while after WrestleMania, and the plans are probably that at some point to have him come back as a face and reunite with the Bloodline and try to start this all over again as faces. But for right now, the WWE has an issue, and that issue is there's nothing else in the WWE that's really attracting the fans other than this. And because of this, we're starting to see them panic and drag their heels. Now, we had said long, long time ago, WWE tends to tell chapter 1 and then chapter 6 and then chapter 12 and then chapter 17. And they should slow down and tell the story. But now what WWE is doing is they are literally saying, we don't have any more story to tell. So now we're just on automatic pilot. It's like when an author doesn't have enough pages, and suddenly they start writing about how the trees look for five paragraphs and how the weather is for five paragraphs. And you're, as a reader, you're saying to yourself, this is all well and good, but do I need to know this? It seems to be stalling tactics. And that's what I'm starting to pick up from this Bloodline storyline. This week on SmackDown, we clearly saw what I would call a stall tactic. Jey Uso was supposed to come out and make his decision one way or the other. And Paul Heyman, to his credit, they gave a really, really good rationale for why Jey Uso may want to stay within the Usos. They were saying, look, Solo's your brother too. Roman is grooming you to take over as the tribal chief. He never one time considered Jimmy. It was always going to be you. And we've got you a title shot against Austin Theory tonight, and you could be bringing home the gold there. Good enough rationale and good enough reasoning. But there was no actual decision made. Jey Uso simply said, well, I'll get back to you on it. And now we're seeing a stall tactic of how many weeks can we keep the Jey Uso has to make a decision thing going. And as a writer, I'm feeling that what they're doing is stalling for time. because they're saying we really don't have anything else past this that's going to compel the fans to watch. This is their fault, by the way. This is the writer's fault. If you can write a good angle like this, and you can get people to participate in that angle that are really, really qualified at what they're doing and bring those characters to life and make you believe everything that they're doing and buy into it, you can do it with other people too. But you chose not to. All of that time that you had while the bloodline was really hot and they were doing the Sami Zayn stuff, you had ample time to say, this is going to come to an end soon. Let's start some really other compelling stories as well. And you chose not to. You chose to just go with obvious things. A feud because somebody attacked somebody with a chair. A feud because somebody interfered in a match. No compelling storyline. So all the WWE fans had to hang their hat on as far as a nice, juicy storyline was the bloodline. And now we're seeing that that's starting to come to an end. And when it does, I don't know if the WWE has anything, Mike, that can actually take the place of this and get the fans to stay tuned. See, that's what I'm most worried about, is that you're going to see the bloodline storyline come to an end. The Usos are going to go do their thing, whatever. And then all of a sudden you're going to see, the ratings are slowly starting to drop off because there's nothing super compelling having the fans anticipate watching.
Absolutely. And think about it this way. The Flash just ended, right? Now, early on in the series, they showed a future newspaper that said, the Flash disappears in crisis, right? That was what's commonly known as a tease. Now, that didn't happen. They showed it the first time, like in season one or season two, 2014, 2015, whatever it was, and that's early on in the show. That didn't happen until about 2017 or 2018, you know. So it took them a while. They maybe showed it one other time, you know, in the ensuing years or one or two other times, but that was a tease. They've been teasing. Well, we're gonna. They teased that we were going to get Sammy out of it and take him away. Fine, you did that. Now you're teasing that you're going to put him right back into it. I mean, yeah, he performed his part on SmackDown really, really well. But I don't expect anything less from Sami Zayn right now. He's just that good of an actor, that good at delivering those lines, that good at making you feel like he's sincere. That's Sami Zayn, you know, that's what he does. That's how good he is right now. Now, yeah, right now they're basically on a treadmill, and frankly, I still say they made a mistake. And well, it wasn't their mistake to make. It was when she left, when Naomi left. But you know, you brought him in. You could have had more storyline to tell if you could have worked it out with Naomi. But that's. We can get into that later. But, yeah, they're like on a treadmill right now.
See, that's my fear, is that they put all of their eggs into one basket. And that basket is the bloodline basket. And they ran with it and ran with it. And now we're getting to the point where the fans are saying, okay, this is a very good storyline. But now we want to see the results, okay? It's like when you're wrapping up a television season. You can stall it and stall it and stall it, but eventually you got to give the payoff. Eventually you got to give the big season finale payoff, right? Well, we sort of got it with Sami Zayn, but now it's time. You're going to have to make a decision, and I don't see how this is going to work out to their advantage, because let's just say Jay. I have this weird feeling that they might have Jay stall and stall and stall and maybe even say he's going to stay with the bloodline a while and have Jimmy go solo for a little while just to try to stretch it out. When quite clearly it's Jay they want to promote. They clearly want Jay to be the standout star of this. And they screwed it up by having Jay be the one who kicked, or Jimmy the one who kicked Roman rather than Jay. Because this would have been a much easier angle to understand had it been Jay who kicked Roman. Because Jimmy was the one who was always kind of right on Roman's side here. Not in the beginning. He was the one trying to get Jay away. But after that, it was Jay who was the one who was kind of believing Sami Zayn. And you weren't too sure where his loyalties was really lying anyway. And he said he didn't want to kick Sami Zayn and all that stuff. So for the most part, it would have been better that way. They chose to go another route. I believe they chose to go that other route because they think it gives Jay more airtime and more more storyline, or what will he do? Will he stay with them? Will he go with his brother? And I think you run the risk of, if you say, we're going to stall another month, he's going to say, I'm with you for now, but Paul Heyman has to go, which is basically what he said. I want to talk to Roman. Paul Heyman has to go. And then you're going to try to run that storyline, whereas, oh, well, is Paul Heyman going to go? Will Roman choose Paul Heyman over Jay? We can't have a lot more of this, or it will fall apart. Because what you're doing now is, before you had Jay in a perfect spot, he was reacting the way every single person who watched him would react. He wants to be loyal to his family. He understands that Sami Zayn is now his friend, and he kind of feels Sami's not lying to him. But he doesn't want to believe it. All that's very believable. But if you push this too far, you're going to make Jay look like an idiot. You're going to make Jay, and also you could make Jay look like somebody who said, well, I mean, if I'm going to be the big cheese and I'm going to get title shots and I'm going to be the tribal chief, then I'll turn on my brother too. Well, if that's the case, then you've destroyed Jimmy's face motivation. And fans are not going to cheer for him the same way, because they're going to say, well, he's greedy too. At this stage of the game, Jey Uso would almost have to be brain dead to not realize that Roman Reigns does not have his best interest at heart. And you don't want your faces, you don't want the heroes to be brain dead idiots who have, or who are clueless. Before, Jey wasn't clueless. He understood what was going on. He just had a really big problem leaving his family for non-family. Blood is thicker than water. Well, now it's blood and blood. So that's not the case anymore. So they got to be very careful with this, Todd, or Jay could lose some of his momentum out of this.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, if Jay loses momentum and not turn face, it's going to be hard.
I do think he'll turn face. I think that's inevitable. And totally be face. In fact, he's face now to a certain extent. It's Fighting Austin Theory, after all. But I do think that they're going to have to be careful, because once again, you can't push this too far, Mike. Otherwise, it just makes Jay look like, well, I'm hanging on to see if the grass is greener. And if the grass is greener, then I don't mind stabbing my brother in the back. You don't want face who says, I don't care if you make me the tribal chief. I don't care if I get title shots. I'm not allowing my brother to be mistreated like that. You want your face to have pure motivation. And if you start to push this too far with Jay, and he doesn't have pure motivations, then when he does side with his brother, it's going to look disingenuous.
Yeah, it will look disingenuous, and that's the thing. And basically, look, that's how you've been playing Roman Reigns this whole time, is almost disingenuous, right? Very disingenuous.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you want to replace one with the other? I know Roman's wants to go away for a while, but it doesn't make sense to replace one with the other. I mean, what? Then what? Then what do you got to do? Replay everything from the beginning just with Jay being the leader?
That's a very good point. What are you going to do? Are you going to make Jay somehow, when Roman takes his hiatus, you're going to make Jay the leader and he's going to somehow lead the bloodline into being faces? See, here's the thing. You have to have the idea of what your long-term story is. And the long-term story should make everybody better, nobody worse. So if you want Jay to take over, that's perfectly fine. But then what you should have done, see, you had your moment, but you rushed it. The WWE is weird because they stall and then they rush, and they stall and they rush. You had your moment, but the moment came too soon. When Roman Reigns was really ready to leave, whether it was after WrestleMania and he loses the belt or whatever it happens to be, or just prior to WrestleMania. See, I would have had it just prior to WrestleMania if he's going to lose the title, because this would have played in. If you had that moment where Jimmy Uso confronted Roman Reigns, and Solo really did take his brother's side and said, you may be the tribal chief, but these are my brothers. That leaves Roman stranded. He has nobody but Paul Heyman going into WrestleMania. And if Roman was to lose the title and then go on a hiatus, then the Usos and Solo would take over as the new bloodline and appoint a tribal chief, I guess. Then you could get as much mileage out of that as you wanted before some group came along that was obviously going to be the biggest threat to the bloodline and do something horrible to them, and that's when Roman Reigns makes his big return as a face, saving his cousins and saying, I made the biggest mistake of my life. I turned my back on my family for success, and it was ridiculous, and I took a long time away. Realized what I did was wrong, and then you got the bloodline back as faces. You had that moment, but you made that moment happen too soon, and now you're trying to like backpedal and say, okay, well, now we got to stall. Well, what will Jay's decision be? Will it affect Paul Heyman's bloodline participation? And then what? Plus, I also hate, and I've always hated, when they do a thing where, oh, the guy kicked him, but it was an accident, or the guy hit him, but it was an accident, but he doesn't think it's an accident. Well, do you not have a videotape? Can you not watch the videotape and say, okay, well, that was clearly an accident? Play it every 5 minutes on Raw, right, and SmackDown. So you're not in front of your TV saying, oh, okay, well, that was an accident, obviously. So I don't like when they do that. Do not like when they do that. If you really wanted this to be the case, I would have had Paul Heyman go another direction. I would have had Paul Heyman say, I know you think what Roman did was horrible. And I know probably all the fans think it's horrible too, but it's very hard being a tribal chief. And sometimes you have to do some things you don't want to do. And this has upset Jimmy. Because while Jimmy was gone on injury, Jay, the fans, they took to you. The fans supported you. The fans were building you up just as much as your tribal chief was building you up. And Jimmy got jealous, and he's still jealous. And you cannot let that affect what's happening here. That would have been a hell of a lot better than to just say, well, if you stay, we'll bribe you with a title shot. If you stay, we'll make you a possible future tribal chief, because that indicates that he would basically stab his own brother in the back if it benefited him, Mike, and you don't want that from a face.
Yeah, you don't want that from – I mean, look, the WWE tends to do write themselves into these type of corners. Now, is it their fault because this became the golden goose? I mean, did they foresee it becoming this big golden goose and this being becoming this big? I mean, they could have, but I mean, I'm not saying it's a good or bad corner to be written into, but this is definitely a big, huge corner that they've kind of written themselves into, and it's like how are they going to write themselves out of it? Because we know. One, that Roman wants to go away for a while. We know that. And we know they have nothing on the horizon in terms of storylines that can basically replace this to, at least for a short amount of time, to get them to the point of where Roman comes back. You know, so they've written themselves kind of into a corner.
Yeah, and they do this quite often when they write themselves into a corner. They come up with moments that are really good. But those moments are out of order. Those moments are, oh, well, this should have been right before the complete collapse of the bloodline. But no, it isn't. It's months before it. And you're like, well, wait a minute. That was the moment. You had the moment. You know, think of a classic movie. Think of Jaws. Everybody saw Jaws, right? You have that classic buildup where there's nobody left on the boat except for the sheriff. And he's got one bullet in his gun, and the shark is chomping on the oxygen tank. And he realizes if he can hit the oxygen tank, he can blow up the shark, but he's got to let the shark get super close to the boat. Fence is building up, and it's building up, and it's building up. Now, what would have happened if he missed that shot, and the shark hit the boat, and then through some other means, they ended up killing the shark? You'd be like, well, wait a minute. That's anticlimactic. You had your moment. That was the moment. When he blew up the shark, everybody was like, woohoo, right? That's your climactic moment. The WWE gives you that climactic moment and then says, yeah, but we're not ready for the ending yet. Then don't give us a climactic moment yet. There was no need for that. There's absolutely no need for that. They do it time and time again, too. But even with all of the flaws in doing that, the real problem, in my opinion, Todd, is that they didn't actively seek out another really super storyline at the same time. If you watch a good soap opera or one of these dramas, you know, these primetime dramas like Game of Thrones or The Flash or Arrow, whatever you're watching, right? There's five or six storylines going on at once. And all of them are pretty good. So when one storyline starts to come to an end, the writers, being smart, start to build the momentum for the underlying storyline. So you say, well, this is the main storyline, but this secondary storyline is really good too. So they drag their heels a little on the secondary storyline enough to get you interested. As the main storyline is coming to an end, the secondary storyline is ready to take over as the first storyline, as the top storyline. WWE does not do that. They put all their eggs in one basket, and now they're afraid they tip the basket over and they got nothing.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I remember back in the day when the NWO did an invasion angle, and there was the first storyline. Then you had the other minor storylines, like the WCW roster, the WCW guys fighting the WCW, other WCW guys in that thing, you know, as secondary. Dungeon of Doom versus the Horsemen and everything.
See, Mike, what would have been wrong if they wanted to stretch this out? What would have been wrong with Roman Reigns then saying, fine, we'll do it your way. You're right, we're one family. Embracing Jimmy Uso, not saying no. Embracing Jimmy Uso, but then talking to Paul Heyman and saying, you know, all three of these guys, when push come to shove, basically told me they don't have my back. This is not a good thing. So you know that Roman is being super disingenuous to everyone, including Solo. Or to have at least Solo say, these are my brothers, but I was sent here purposely to guard the tribal chief, so that's what I have to do. I don't want to do this to my brothers, and I hope you don't make me do it again. See, Solo should have hesitated when he did that. So Roman could have said, you know, I said do this, and then you would have said, okay, well, Solo didn't really want to do it, because then you understand that there's more complexity to this. This way, Solo's motivation is very questionable. You said they were your brothers, but you turned on them, no problem. And now you got Jay in that position where you're saying, we'll give you stuff if you turn on your brother. But at the same time, Jay's saying, well, I don't want to be in the bloodline if Paul Heyman's in there. It's starting to get to be a treadmill. And I still don't see. I could see you putting it on a treadmill, Mike, if you're saying stall for a month because we're building up another storyline for other characters that's going to take the place being the top storyline in WWE. But I don't see them building up any other storylines that's going to take this place. So what are they stalling for?
I don't know. I mean, look, here's the deal. You've talked about these soap operas before, right? You know, and, you know, like Days of Our Lives has been around since the mid-60s, right? And doing 5 days a week. At one time it was a half hour, but they stretched it out to an hour, right? An hour, 5 days a week, 5 hours, right? Monday through Friday, right? So, and they each time they have a storyline, they stretch it out. They have to stretch it out because they need to fill that time, right? That hour on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And so they had to do it that way because they had so much time to film. So anyway, this is what has happened. I mean, I maintain this. They could have waited to flip Sammy. You know, I mean, I think they might have ended the Sammy Zayn and his story storyline a little bit too soon. I always thought that it would have made sense to wait until they, you know, turn him into Sammy Uso, have him be Sammy Uso for a while, and then have them turn on him, you know, after they've made him Sammy Uso. But that they didn't want to tell that story. Right?
Well, now you know they regret it because they're trying to put Sammy and, to a lesser extent, Kevin Owens back into this storyline. But you're right that the real connection was between Jay and Sammy, and they tried to kill that. Not with the kick, because after the kick, Jay Uso said, "I didn't want to do that." But then later they tried to kill it by having Jay be, you know, really super mad at Sammy, and then they said, "Oh no, but maybe we better not do that." And now all of a sudden, Jey Uso is starting to listen to Sammy. The whole idea behind this should have been that Jey Uso was never mad at Sami Zayn. That Jey Uso clearly understood what Sami Zayn was saying was correct, and they should have had that big moment. And the big moment should have been, as a writer, I'm telling you, this would have worked. Long after the WrestleMania and all that stuff, at some point they should have had their moment where Jey Uso and Sami Zayn met in a skit backstage or wherever it happened to be, and Sami Zayn really laid it on the line and said, "Why would I be here? I'm the tag team champion now. We beat you guys, right? Make it after they beat them. Me and Kevin are the tag team champions. There's no reason for me to come to you and try to tell you something if all I wanted was to try to mess with your head like Jimmy was saying, because then it would have worked, right? We got the belts, right? But I'm still here. And the reason I'm still here is I still feel like I'm your friend, and I'm telling you, you are being used. I'm telling you, they are making a fool out of you." Then it would have been Jay's moment to say, "And I'm telling you that I've known that from the very beginning, Sammy. You're not telling me anything I don't know. What do you think, I'm stupid? I know I'm being used, but that is my blood. It's very easy for you to walk away. There was no blood involved. There's no family involved. You were an honorary member. But then, well, you shared no blood. I do. If I walk away, what happens to Jimmy? If I walk away, what happens to Solo? If I walk away, what happens to our families when we get together for holidays, when we get together for birthday celebrations or whatever? There's much more to this than wrestling. I can't walk away. You understand that? That way, we know that Jay clearly knows what's going on. But he's going to remain loyal until he absolutely cannot do it anymore. Then he doesn't look stupid. He looks smart but extremely loyal, which is exactly what you want if you're going to turn him to be a big face. It should have been Jimmy who was saying, I initially didn't like this, but I like it now. Everything's fine now. And that way, when you had that moment, when Jey Uso, not Jimmy, Jey Uso kicks Roman Reigns, you know that was a long time coming. He swallowed it for I don't know how long. He was never fooled. Never one time fooled. But he was loyal until he couldn't possibly be anymore. That's a great storyline, because then you still have the friendship between Sami Zayn and Jey Uso. And when the Usos finally do both turn face, there is no choice. They want their belts back. And now you have a compelling storyline where Jey Uso says, you've been a very loyal friend to me, and you absolutely everything you said to me was true. And you looked out for me when you didn't need to. But we're professional wrestlers. And me and my brother want those belts. And I understand that you and Kevin want them too. And we can be friends outside here. But when we meet, it's not going to be that way, Sammy. That way, there's a compelling storyline too. Roman Reigns can then say, I blame Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And that should have been their mission, is to destroy them, not to get their tag team belts. That was a stupid, stupid storyline. Just to destroy them. That way, you now really have some tension, because what do you do? What do you do if Roman Reigns and Solo attack Sami Zayn backstage? Jay going to do? What's Jimmy going to do? Are they going to help him? Or are they going to say, well, we're trying to stay out of the bloodline business one way or the other? There's a lot of compelling storyline you could have told there. I think what you did was you messed up certain parts of it. It's like when a writer writes a book, all the chapters have to flow perfectly. And if one of the chapters gets clunky, sometimes you lose a little bit of that flow of story. And that's what ended up happening with this bloodline story, Mike. It got clunky at parts, and now we're unsure because the motivations keep changing. First, Jimmy was totally against his brother being used by Roman, and then he bought into it 100%. Then Jey was Sammy's friend, and then he wasn't. And then he was again, and then he wasn't. And now Jimmy's 100% against Roman again, and Jey isn't. The motivations are changing too much, and there's not a lot of motivation behind the motivation.
Right, and that's the thing. If you look at, again, I'm going to go back to these soap operas. Each character in a particular soap opera has a motivation for what they do, either the show or a group of shows. Right? You know, these soap operas go from season to season, right? And they stop for the summer, whatever it is, you know. And so each character will have a motivation. Now, they don't always jive with each other's motivations, but they're there. And so I mean, look, we know what happened with, like, let's take Dallas. We know what happened in Dallas. We know that. Everybody had a motivation. Most of them hated J.R. Ewing and all that stuff. And it led up to one of the biggest storylines ever in TV history, who killed JR, right?
Yes.
So that's how you do this stuff. You can have different people have different motivations, but those motivations will end up playing into one particular storyline, you know?
And Mike, though, you got to be careful, because this is a good example. You have to be careful, because what happened to Dallas after that? They realized all the mistakes they made, and they literally had to say that a whole season was a dream. They literally had to erase a whole season and say, well, that whole season doesn't count. It was somebody's dream, because they realized how badly they screwed up. They're not going to have that option in professional wrestling. See, we should have been taken on the journey with Jey Uso. And that moment would have been when he told Sami Zayn, Sammy, you're not telling me anything I don't know. You think I don't know what happened to Roman? You think I don't know he's using me and my brother? You think I don't know we're being treated like garbage? You think I like it? I know what's happening. But if I just leave, it's never going to change. Maybe if I stay, I can convince him that this isn't the right way to do things. Maybe if I stay and my brother stay, eventually things will get better because I just can't walk away from my family. Then we would have felt for him and said, this is the same reason a husband doesn't leave his wife if she has an alcohol problem. A wife doesn't leave their husband if they have a problem. You don't walk away from your family. When your family has trouble, you try to heal them, right? We would have felt that. We would have felt that Jay is willing to sacrifice his own happiness here and be used as a tool by Roman in the hopes that if he sticks around, eventually things will change, Roman will soften up a little bit, and the family will all be good because he doesn't want to be the one that rocks the boat. Everyone would have felt that, and everyone would have sympathized with Jay. And we would have been on that journey of when he gets pushed too far, that's the moment it's going to snap. Instead, they've opted to go with Jimmy for some weird reason, Mike.
Yeah, who knows? And then here's the deal. You know, they were going to do the whole thing with Jimmy and Jay versus Solo and Rowan, right? I mean, if they did it the way you could said to do it, then, you know, at one point you have Jay go away from the bloodline, then you got Jimmy going away. Then they have to go and reason with Solo, right? Try and reason with Solo.
But that moment they could have that moment. They could have still had that same moment. If Jay Uso had to been the one that kicked Roman, they could have still had that same moment where Roman said, Jimmy, what side do you kick your brother in the face? And Jimmy wouldn't do it. And then when Solo literally said, sorry, they're my brothers, Roman's alone. And you could have went one of two ways with your storyline. Either Roman agrees to be Mr. Nice Guy, and he's disingenuous as he can possibly be, and he's smiling in the face of his cousins, but he's really trying to stab him in the back, and only Paul Heyman knows it. Or he really does try, but at the end of the day fails, or Paul sees it falling apart and plants seeds of whatever. Either way, or you could have had him say no, then I'm on my own, and lose the title, go away for a few months, like I said, and come back with a different attitude, saving his, and saying, you know, I was an idiot. It took some soul searching to realize how right you guys were and how wrong I was. That's all. That's all you had to do. Instead, you're stalling for time, and, you know, well, how can we stretch this bloodline thing out another couple of months? Can we get past another episode promising the fans something and then not really giving it to them, just say, okay, next week maybe. Yeah, not quite this week yet. Fans are going to get tired of it. And you might lose that momentum, and that's not what you want. Jey Uso right now would be a top star. If he was the one who kicked Roman, if everything we just said was exactly what happened, and Jay had finally had enough, finally came to the point where he had enough, then that would have been great. But at some point, you got to give the payoff, and you can't give the payoff in a drip, drip, drip. You don't want to see an action-adventure movie where the main good guy and the main bad guy fight, and they have this great rooftop battle for 35 minutes, and then the bad guy just, gets away, and then, in the getaway car, he dies of his injury. Because that's anticlimactic. That's giving the fans what they want. The bad guy gets his, but not in the way you want. In the drip, 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 where you're like, that wasn't satisfying. That's the problem. You're going to get the whole bloodline probably turning on Roman eventually, but it's not satisfying the way you're going to do it because you're trying to stretch it out because you're in panic mode that you have nothing else the fans are interested in. The fans are not interested in Cody Rhodes versus Brock Lesnar again. I'm telling you right now, they're not. Fans like Cody Rhodes mostly because Cody Rhodes is extremely fan-friendly. He comes out, he signs autographs, he gives away stuff to kids, he shakes everybody's hand, he's, you know, he's very interactive with the fans, so the fans are reacting to the fact that he's fan-friendly. But he doesn't have a good storyline. This Brock Lesnar thing is not a good storyline. And the reason it's not a good storyline is how do you rectify it? So you're one apiece. Brock Lesnar lost with a little schoolboy roll-up, basically, a leverage pin. Cody Rhodes passed out. And now you're going to have some kind of a bull rope match, I'm hearing, or possibly a Hell in a Cell or last man standing. And what's that going to do? If Cody wins, big deal. It does what? And if Brock wins, big deal. It does what? There's nothing really on the line. It doesn't feel like a storyline. And we still don't even know Brock's motivation for doing it. See, that's the thing. We know all the motivations of all of the Usos and even Paul Heyman. We know all their motivations. We know no motivation at all why Brock Lesnar did what he did. And Cody's motivation is just, oh, well, you're never going to get rid of me. I'll fight you if I only have one arm. I'll fight you if I only have one leg. I'll fight you if I'm, you know, tore up. I don't care. Okay, well, what's that motivation? We need to know why Brock Lesnar did what he did. We're never going to, because they don't know. There is no storyline there, folks. There's no storyline. You had a storyline going with Austin Theory. You left it in the dust. The storyline with Austin Theory, I know the McMahon thing happened and he couldn't help it. But the storyline there was Vince McMahon is pushing Austin Theory as basically the guy that he has handpicked. And at some point, Vince McMahon was going to be so abrasive and so demanding of Austin Theory that eventually Theory would just snap and become a face. And I still say he's going to do it, but now they've just said, oh, well, that's on the back burner, and he's just going to get lucky wins every single week, wins he doesn't deserve. You're making him the Miz. He never was the Miz. He was John Cena. See, that's the thing. He was a guy that came in with a bad attitude but a whole lot of talent. And one day finally woke up and realized, I don't need to take these shortcuts or whatever. I'm too good for this. And away you go, right? No, now he's the Miz. I'll just take advantage of everybody else's mistakes. And, you know, when somebody else hits somebody with something, I'll pin them off their move. This is not elevating Austin Theory. There's no Austin Theory storyline anymore. The Austin Theory storyline is gone. So Cody Rhodes, who might be one of your top faces, there's no storyline. Seth Rollins has won the title, but there's no storyline. Brock Lesnar, no storyline. There's really no storylines for any of your top guys. Even Dominic Mysterio no longer has a storyline. He had a really good storyline with Rey. It's over, and now there's no storyline. You had all this time to prepare for this is how the Rey Mysterio, Dominic Mysterio thing is going to end, and then we're going to slide Dominic into the storyline, and there's nothing. So all of your top guys have no storyline. Now, to your credit, I think you're trying to slide Dominic into a storyline, possibly with Cody. Cody, again, he already has Brock Lesnar, so this is a mistake. He's got Brock Lesnar coming up. There's no need to get involved with Dominic Mysterio. Let Dominic Mysterio get involved in his own feud. You have no storylines. Does Finn Balor have a storyline? He does not. Does Damian Priest have a storyline? He does not. Does AJ Styles have a storyline? He does not. Time and time again, I can tell you the people have no real storyline. They may have a feud, but they have no storyline. So really, the bloodline is about it at this stage of the game, Mike.
It is about it, unless you want to call what they're doing with Charlotte Flair a pseudo storyline, because think about it. What they said is they told Bianca Belair, do not come out. We're going to award her this belt. Do not come out and try to do something with it, right? And who comes out? Charlotte Flair. Well, rightfully so. After that happens, rightfully so, Bianca Belair was pissed off, and rightfully so, because you told me not to come out, but you allowed her to come out, right?
100% correct. But, Mike, they've even screwed that up, because I'm going to tell you where they're going to go with this. They're going to turn Bianca heel, and they're going to turn her heel off what? Something she's 100% right about? See, the WWE does that way too often. The motivation for people turning heel is like, well, I agree with them. You're not supposed to agree with them. You're supposed to say, well, they got a screwed up take on that. No, Bianca Belair is 100% correct. Charlotte Flair should be the heel. Okay, Charlotte Flair come out, upstage Bianca Belair. Bianca Belair has every right to be upset, and obviously she's in the right. And we're supposed to do what? Say, oh, she's being a baby? No. So this is the problem. This is a big, big problem. Now, is there a storyline there? Well, I don't know what the storyline is other than we might be turning Bianca heel. Well, when I say a storyline, I don't necessarily mean that. Like, right now, you might see Asuka and probably Bianca Belair and Charlotte Flair do some kind of three-way match. That's fine, but that's not a storyline. That's a feud, but it's not a storyline. A storyline is Bianca Belair and Charlotte have some sort of a, you know, connection here where they both don't like Asuka all of a sudden. And you take that to another level by, you know, whatever it happens to be. But you don't do it just as a feud. We could have had the Usos just come out and attack whoever, and that's not a storyline. We could have the Bloodline come out and say, okay, well, the Bloodline's just going to come out and attack whoever. Judgment Day. Not a storyline, that's a feud. The storylines are like the Bloodline storyline, where Jey Uso is obviously subservient to Roman Reigns. He doesn't want to be. His brother is injured. When his brother comes back, his brother tells him you're being used, but slowly his brother falls into line. When that's not even enough, Solo is brought in as an enforcer. There's storylines. There's a buildup. There's a plot line that continues and continues. We don't have anything like that. We just have a little bit of a buildup for a feud. So if somebody runs down to the ring, for instance, Cody Rhodes and Dominic Mysterio, that's not a storyline. That's a potential feud, but that's not a storyline. Storylines have a lot of backstage stuff and a lot of drama, whatever, where you say, oh, there's going to be a lot of the backstage, you know, theatrics and things like we saw with the Bloodline. Not just, oh, I came in the ring and insulted you, and then I slapped you, and now you're mad at me, so you want to fight me. That's not a storyline. That's a feud. So when we say storylines, I mean a deeper storyline where there's actual interactions with the characters and you get to understand both of their motivations and things like that, Mike. We don't have anything like that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it took them a while to hit on the Bloodline. How long did it take them to hit on it? And then they hit on it, and now we're seeing what they – I mean, look, we've seen storylines, not quite this good, but storylines where they've hit on something, and then they cut it off at the knees, right? I mean, look, the whole thing with Mandy Rose and Otis, right?
Yep, that was a storyline, yes.
That was a storyline. They got to a point, and then – for some reason, they either took it away from the woman who wrote it or they fired her, right? And we saw what happened after they did that. It all went to shit, you know, because they...
Yeah, I mean, look, we can name you the storylines. Storylines aren't always good, but at least they're a storyline. Bobby Lashley being with Lana, that's a storyline. It continued week after week after week. The idea was Rusev and Lana had broken up, and Lana's rubbing it in his face that she's with Bobby Lashley, and there's a storyline there. that continues week after week, and there's interactions backstage. It's not just in the ring. It's not just for the one feud. It's an ongoing storyline. An ongoing storyline lasts a month or two or three, if not more. How long has the Bloodline lasted? Now, feuds are chapters in that storyline. So that's why we have to separate it. Storylines have chapters, and the chapters are feuds. But it's not just a feud. So if Kevin Owens comes down and whacks, Gunther with a chair, and Gunther says, "I challenge you," okay, well, that's a feud. A storyline is if Imperium and, say, Sammy and Kevin or whatever are involved in smaller feuds with a lot of storyline buildup, where Gunther is saying to, you know, Ludwig Kaiser, if you want to be a part of this, you want to continue to be a part of this, you have to take out Sami Zayn. You have to do this. Or, Sami Zayn saying, "I don't know why we're involved in this stupid feud. We're tag team champions. We can't get involved. Why are we feuding with Gunther? He's not even a tag team." And there's some animosity between him and Kevin Owens, and you're not sure where that's going. That's a storyline. Within those storylines, there are chapters that can be feuds. How many feuds did the Bloodline have? 20. Roman had his separate feuds. Solo had a couple. The Usos had a couple. It was all a good storyline. The closest we had was, crazy enough, was the Maximum Male Model storyline with the Alpha Academy. And you took it away. The idea, I think, was either that Maxine was lying through her teeth, and they were totally poking fun at Otis, and they were just going to make a mockery out of him and laugh behind his back, and Chad Gable was going to finally make Otis come to his senses, or she really did think he was all that, and Maximum Male Models was going to grow increasingly jealous over the fact that they were being rifled out for who they thought was some fat boob, and make a motion on him. And then Maxine would have had to go to Chad Gable, who she's insulted time and time and time again, for his help, and say, "If you don't want to do it for me, do it for Otis." And then those two get back together as friends, and they wipe out the Maximum Male Models. Those are storylines that I guess that's where they were going with them. Now, there's a touch of a storyline coming up, but I fear that they're not going to give it the attention it needs. And that is, where is Damian Priest's head at this point? We had said last week on last week's show, one of the two of them is turning face. Well, it would appear now that it would be Damian Priest, because what we didn't see after Raw went off the air is that Damian Priest got back in the ring and shook Seth Rollins' hand. That usually indicates that he's going to turn. So that means that there's probably a Finn Balor, Damian Priest feud coming up. If you're smart, you just don't have it that, Monday night Finn Balor says, "I don't know who the hell you think you are. You're not the boss." And then they have a feud, because that's not a storyline. Storyline would be that Finn Balor is growing increasingly frustrated with the fact that Damian Priest seems to be getting more attention, and Dominic seems to be getting more attention, and Rhea seems to be getting more attention, and he's supposed to be the leader. And he starts pulling his, leader card on them and says, "You'll do this and you'll do that," or "We can't do this," or I've taken this match instead of you because I feel that, since I'm the leader." Remember, they kicked out Edge because they said, "We don't really have a leader." So you could do a storyline with that, Todd. But if you're just going to do Finn Balor attacks Damian Priest because he's jealous of him, that's not a storyline. That's just a feud.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, if Damian Priest get attacked by Finn Balor, that'd be like being attacked by being Pearl Harbor by him. And like you said, I remember back in 1989, the Mega Powers, the main event, the backstage area when Randy Savage attacked Hulk Hogan at the medical attention area.
right.
over Elizabeth.
And you know how long they built that up where weird things would happen, that Hogan had to carry Elizabeth back to the dressing room, or Hogan was distracted, but where Elizabeth got hurt and Savage was saying, what is this? He seems to be paying more attention to my wife than me. And there's a jealousy, and it was growing and growing and growing and growing, and it finally snapped. That's a storyline. There always used to be storylines. Everybody had one. Hell, the mid-carders had them in the old WWE. Now we don't. Where's the storyline for Eli Drake, LA Knight? Where's the storyline? I see none. He should be getting a storyline immediately. And not just, well, he's in Money in the Bank and he might win it. That's not a storyline. I want to see him increasingly start to recognize his own popularity, start to warm up to that crowd and have some heel's motivation to say something or do something to him, or him run afoul of someone. And I'd still say it should be Dominic Mysterio. He offered to do it for Rey before, remember? But he did it in such a crude manner that Rey ended up fighting him instead of him fighting Dominic. But he called Dominic a punk and everything else, so why not? You know, this is the thing. They don't want Dominic to talk, right? The crowd won't let him talk. Can you imagine the reaction LA Knight would get if him and Dominic are in the ring, and every single time Dominic tries to talk, the crowd is definitely going to shout him down. And eventually LA Knight just grabbed the microphone out of his hand and say, let me talk to you. And the whole crowd is going to go. And then really just let him have it. And say, you know, you're a second generation punk with minimal talent who hooked up with some floozy here who thinks she's a tough guy. And you really think you got people scared? You really think you got people worried? Everybody knows what you are. You're a punk kid. You're a brat. You ain't tough. You don't know the meaning of the word tough. Amazing that you came from the same genes as Rey Mysterio, because you might be right. He may not be your father, because you've obviously inherited nothing from him, and that includes talent, my friend. People would go nuts, because he's the guy who could tell off Dominic Mysterio in the way the crowd really wants to tell him off. He would be the one to be able to really tell off Dominic Mysterio. And then, well, the feud's on, right? Then you got a storyline. You got the storyline that LA Knight is starting to realize, I'm getting popular here. And Dominic Mysterio is starting to realize, I'm losing my edge here because no one's believing me. And I'm going to have to make them believe me. That I'm tough, that I'm this, that I'm street, you know, and you got yourself a fairly good storyline going into that. And LA Knight can certainly handle it. Now, Dominic, you know, he needs a little help, but Rhea's good there, and Dominic's getting better, and I think they could handle it just fine, Mike, but you got to try, because right now the storylines are one, and that's the bloodline.
Right, and that's the thing. Think about it this way, Marcus. Not only to the biggest applause line for LA Knight could be this. You could say, I at one point have been called the namer of dummies, and you're the biggest dummy I've
yes, if they would pull that off. Right. That would be the time to bring that back. Do you know how loud that crowd would roar, Mike, if he said, I am not just the hottest superstar in the Federation. I am not just the future of the WWE. I am not just LA Knight, the whatever he is. I'm also the namer of dummies. And you, my friend, are the biggest of them all. You're the king of the dummies. I mean, that crowd would just go nuts.
Oh, man. I mean, we know what kind of nuclear heel heat that Dominic is getting right now. That heat, that face heat that he would get for that would send him into the stratosphere. And look, we said it before with LA Knight. He's not a young guy. I mean, look, what's his name? Dominic is, what, 25, 26 years old? He's got a number of years left on his career. LA Knight is, what, 40?
Right.
You know, so he doesn't have that much longer on his career to become this big guy in the WWE. So that would be a good deal. And as far as Damian Priest goes, the big thing that could happen with that is if they're going to turn him face, then what you do is at some point you have Bad Bunny come in and they kind of make up.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that, and I thought to myself, if you're going to do this, you should have Finn Balor really get on him about that and say, look, I don't know how you got a title shot above me anyway. You lost to Bad Bunny. You lost to a rapper. That way you could give Damian Priest the opportunity to say, I lost because my heart wasn't into it. I lost because, unlike you, Bad Bunny really is a friend of mine. Unlike Dominic, Bad Bunny is really a friend of mine. And even though I told y'all he was a friend of mine, I still defended you guys when he stuck his nose in. Was my heart into crippling him? No, it wasn't. And because I went out there and tried to be more careful than I normally am, because that's a friend of mine, I lost. And that was damn humiliating. But don't for 1 minute think that if I wasn't motivated to destroy him, I couldn't have, because I could have. Then it makes sense, because then you're giving, I see what happened. Damian Priest went out there and said, whatever happens, he's still my friend. My heart isn't into busting his ass. That makes sense. Then you could all easily have Finn Balor say, and that's why you can't be the leader of the Judgment Day, because you're not ruthless. You don't have that in you. You have too much sympathy for the people who don't deserve any or whatever. Then you got a storyline. Or Damian Priest could say, you know, the Judgment Day was always supposed to be about talent that was underrated. Talent that wasn't getting their moment. The only thing you even joined for, Finn, was to try to get your moment. You didn't care if anybody else got a moment. You came out of here from NXT and you were a failure. You convinced us to turn on Edge. And then you thought you were going to hog the whole show, and when that didn't happen, you became bitter. You got a pretty good storyline, because then Damian Priest gets out for my own Judgment Day, where people really are going to be in here that are underrated. People really are going to be utilized that should have a bigger position on this in this federation. And you could do it if you wanted to. Or you could just have Finn Balor fill out Judgment Day with other people that and go after Damian Priest, where it's basically Priest versus Judgment Day. You know, the guy alone against the mob is always a popular thing, but then you've got some storyline. The problem with this storyline is that while I think Damian Priest could possibly handle it, I'm not sure Finn can. Finn is not good on the mic. I don't care what anybody says. He's not that good on the mic. He doesn't come off as believable a lot. And this is the same problem I have with Karrion Kross. Karrion Kross does not come off as believable. No matter what he does. And, you know, here's the thing, guys. We should pat ourselves on the back again. Because once again, months after we used the phrase that Karrion Kross looks like a guy you just sit in a bar with and watch a football game, those exact words came out of the mouth of Jim Cornette, who said he just doesn't have the look. He looks just like some dude you'd sit at a football game with and have a beer. What we said months ago, months and months and months ago. It doesn't matter what he does. It doesn't matter if him and Scarlett attack AJ Styles. It's not believable. You know what is believable? What's believable is they're really a couple, and he obviously cares for her very much. Turn him. Have something happen to her as a result of some heel and turn him, where he drops the TikTok and he drops the stupid tarot card stuff and everything else and just says, enough. You want to see the real me is worse. Especially when it involves somebody I care about. You got a potential there. Now, what Jim Cornette said that I don't agree with, he said there's no way to get him over. You can't get him over. Yes, you can, and that's the way you can. You might not be able to get him off of some supernatural whatever, you know, and her as a witch, because they don't come off that way. But you can get them over as a couple. And I think if you took Karrion Kross and gave him a really good storyline, I'd have to think long and hard about who you want to feud him with. It would have to be somebody that I guess also had a woman in it. I guess it could potentially be any two that are hated. And you wait and see if the fans don't absolutely get behind Karrion Kross. They want to sort of like him because he's a likable guy. They want to sort of like her because she's somewhat likable. And obviously she's easy on the eyes. They don't want to hate him because they don't come off as somebody you want to hate. Dominic Mysterio comes off as somebody you want to hate, a smug brat who thinks he's better than he is, thinks he's tough, is disrespectful to his own parents, is hooked up with some girl who's obviously, you know, pants in the family, and he just thinks he's a badass. Those are the type of people you want to punch in the face. Karrion Kross doesn't have that vibe at all. So I don't know why they don't run with him, Todd, and just do the obvious, and that is flip him.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, there would be a good feud with Karrion Kross, a good storyline, if he was not injured right now or being sick right now, is Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss.
That would have been excellent, yeah. Yeah, that would have been actually good. But then again, they'd probably have to lose that one, so. And you're not going to see Alexa Bliss anytime soon, and I guess Bray Wyatt's coming soon, but at some point, Mike, you're paying the guy anyway. He's not going to win a feud with AJ Styles. Even though AJ Styles is more than happy to put over younger talent, they're not going to have AJ Styles lose that feud because they think AJ's still too important to the company. So where is this going to leave Karrion Kross? At some point, they've got to do something with him. And again, I think it would be better if – this is what the WWE used to do. You don't like this? Remember when The Rock came out? I'm Rocky Maivia, and I'm a nice guy. And I got my stupid little pineapple haircut and my dumb outfit. And my dad was Rocky Johnson. Cheer me. And they boot him out of the building. They boot him out of the building. They didn't say, okay, well, you suck. Sorry. See you later. Bye. You don't have what it takes. He doesn't. Became one of the most successful, if not the most successful, wrestler in their career. Because you flipped them. Because you said, well, if this don't work, let's try the opposite. And it worked. WWE needs to start doing that again, Mike.
They need to start doing that again. Look, Rhea Ripley is another one that you want to see somebody punch her in the face. Because she's been getting away with a lot of stuff that normal people, yeah, she's a bigger girl and all that stuff, but she's that type of heel that she doesn't get go away heat. She gets the type of heat you want that type of heel to get, you know. Just like that, now Dominic's probably 4, 5, 6, 10 steps ahead of her in heat right now because he's just nuclear heat, but she gets just about the same type of heat that Dominic does. I mean, I could very easily see – now, she's not going to lose the title to her, but I can very easily see if you flip both of these two people, a feud between Dominic and her and this guy and Kross and Scarlett. I mean, Scarlett's a wrestler. She's been in the ring before. You know, so, I mean, she's not going to – She's not gonna. You know, we know what they want to do with Rhea. We know what they want to do with Rhea. So, but and she's probably not gonna be Rhea. But again, it would be something for them to do. And look, you could very well, people want to like those two people. People want to like those two. And
you notice one thing, Mike. You notice we're all saying you could make a good face out of a feud with Dominic. That just shows you how good Dominic is. Put Eli Drake with him. Eli Drake is a huge face. Put Karrion Kross with him. Karrion Kross would be a huge face. But what's the one thing they have in common? Dominic. See, they need more of this. There's certain heels who really are not doing their job in the WWE, and there's certain faces that really aren't doing their job. And that doesn't mean they're not good athletes, and it doesn't mean they're not good wrestlers, and they're not fun to watch, but they're just not getting any real heat or pop. And one of them is Bobby Lashley. Where's the pop or the heat for Bobby Lashley? Where is it? He comes out, and they're like, oh, he's a superstar, so we'll cheer for him because he's a big name. But nobody really cares whether he wins or loses. And he has no storyline and hasn't had for a long time. You had all that stuff with MVP going on behind the scenes trying to recruit him. Well, where did that go? Where did that lead? So we're spending our time watching this thing. There's going to be a story involved in this. Something's going to happen. Nothing happened. Nothing. It's ridiculous. Time. We got this big video package with the Viking Raiders and Valhalla coming back, and there's going to be this big whatever involved. There's no storyline at all. None. You're chasing around someone. Maxine. Yeah, that'll be a great storyline. Just a tremendous storyline. I mean, if you really wanted to use them, there was so much you could have done. Right away, they were counting the ring lights and no storyline behind it. The WWE will start to give you a storyline and then just stall completely on it. Where is the – now Mustafa Ali's back to being a face, I guess? I thought he was Positive Ali, and he was this annoying whatever heel. Well, he's not now. So that didn't last very long. What the hell really is going on? How come you can't keep storylines going? Keep them going long enough to even – okay, maybe it doesn't take off immediately, but you got to give it time. Give it a little tiny bit of time. Instead, they give it 2 weeks, and they're like, forget it. We're not going to do that anymore. We tried. No, stick with it. Do you know how many things you wouldn't have had in the WWE if you gave up? You wouldn't have had The Rock, because Rocky Maivia was booed out of the building as a face. Nobody liked him. Nobody cared. His career was going nowhere. He was scheduled for Palookaville, but you stuck with him. And you tried different things, and man, did you find out that that guy really has a load of talent. You just had to make sure it was discovered. The Ringmaster, Steve Austin, yeah, that was a success. People laughed out loud at it. So if you just said, well, the hell with it. He ain't got what it takes. Oh, he didn't? Well, I don't know. Stone Cold Steve Austin seemed to sell you a ton of merchandise, so I guess he did. But you just had to find it. Now the WWE doesn't do that. They're just like, okay, that didn't work. Throw them out. We're not going to rework anything. I don't understand why. And when they do come up with a storyline, half of it doesn't make any sense. We still don't know why Maxine threw away her management of Maximum Male Models to go with Alpha Academy, when she was insulting Chad Gable every single week. What changed her mind? Where's the motivation? What happened that made her say, okay, now I see the light and I'd rather be a part of Alpha Academy? We don't know. It just happened. So we as fans are supposed to say, okay, well, reset the drawing board. We don't know why, but now Maxine's on this team. That doesn't make any sense. How come you can't show us as fans what happened? How come you don't care enough about those characters to say, the maximum male model thing isn't working out. We want Maxine to go with Alpha Academy. So let's film some vignettes in which Maxine is starting to realize that the male maximum male models are using her, and she actually likes Otis, and that Chad Gable isn't that bad of a guy, and maybe at some point, you know, Chad Gable come in and rescue Otis from a situation where the maximum male models are on him, and she'll see the light and she'll go with him. At least it's something. It's not a great storyline, but it's an excuse. No, there's no excuse. Just 1 week, here she is, Mike, marching out with Alpha Academy and you, with no maximum male models, and you're like, okay, what the hell?
Right, and that's the thing. Now, Grant, we did say that it would do Alpha Academy, you know, good to have a woman in the group. But again, we weren't talking about, her. We were talking about somebody else, right? Alpha Academy, you know. But that's a storyline. And look, that's the thing. You got these storylines. I mean, Alpha Academy was kind of a big storyline because he was taking Otis that was going nowhere, and they ended up being his number one guy. They ended up being, world champion, tag team champions at one point? So,
yeah,
that was a storyline there. And we need more of that. We need to figure out whether or not these people, I mean, the LWO has no storyline. I mean, we understood what happened when LA Knight left the Maximum Male Models. We understood that. That was a storyline.
Absolutely, and you're right. LWO comes back, a great big, you know, really a major team, right? And they have no angle whatsoever. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Now they're starting to promote Santos Escobar a little bit, but, you know, too little too late. And they don't have a storyline going. How come they don't have a storyline going? And that's another thing. When they had the LWO, before they had it, what was the storyline? The Santos Escobar's crew hated everybody, they were bad guys, and then all of a sudden, just one day, they're like, we respect Rey Mysterio so much. What are you talking about? Something had to happen. We had to see why. There should have been some buildup where, you know, one of Santos Escobar's guys does something or is going to do something to Rey Mysterio, and Escobar say, absolutely not. Don't touch him. And then they could have second-guessed him and said, what are you talking about? You know, we're here to take over. No. I said no. That way we'd say, well, there's something between Rey Mysterio and Escobar. And then if they had that moment where he said, look, our families were this and that and the other thing, you say, ah, that's why Escobar didn't want anything bad to happen to Mysterio. Maybe he's not such a bad guy. And then if the other two follow suit and just say, well, you know, he's the boss, whatever. Okay. Then the LWO forms and they're one big happy family. And you got a little bit of a storyline. We got nothing. Just one day he was a heel, next day he loves Rey Mysterio. There's no motivation because the WWE is too lazy to give you that because they think you don't need it or don't want it. Again, one of your most major angles. Brock Lesnar and Cody Rhodes. Main eventing, or close to main eventing, three different pay-per-views now, and there's no motivation. Not one single time has Brock Lesnar said, the reason I did this to Cody Rhodes is. There's speculation, oh, well, this, or oh, well, that, but he hasn't said anything. And Cody Rhodes hasn't even asked. Wouldn't the very first thing you would do if you were Cody Rhodes is to say, the one thing I want to find out is why? I didn't do anything to Brock Lesnar. What the hell? Nope, don't care. That's a major problem. It's a major problem. There's no motivation, crapola. Ask anyone. Go to a creative writing class, and you will find that your teacher, professor, whatever they happen to be, will tell you if you're writing a successful story, Your characters have to have motivation. They don't necessarily have to have a good motivation. I mean, you know, there are people who write novels where it's like, oh, well, so-and-so is going to get my position as CEO in the company, so I'm going to murder them. Well, no rational human being is going to murder somebody for that reason, but at least it's a motivation. And you as a reader get to say, okay, well, that guy's so greedy, he's willing to kill somebody to get this position. That's outrageous, but at least it's a reason. You should have motivation for all of your characters' actions. That's why we always laugh at horror films, where we say four or five people have been slaughtered, and you hear a noise outside, and you're like, I'll go look. Yeah, that's what you'd do. You'd go look. And that's why people laugh at it and say, there's no motivation for that. You wouldn't, in a million years, you wouldn't go outside the house and look. And you'd never split up. You'd be like, oh, obviously, there's somebody trying to kill us. Let's all stay together, 8 or 10 of us, right? Now, let's all split up. That's why these horror films are laughed at, because there's no real motivation. Nobody in the world would do the things they do. And so we don't care about those characters, and when they get killed, you're like, oh, who cares? Sadly for the characters that Jason is killing or Michael Myers is killing, the only one you ever felt bad for was was Jamie Lee Curtis's character, because she had motivation. That's the difference. So when there's no motivation for what you're doing as a wrestler, then we don't care if you win or lose. Just like we don't care if you get killed by Jason if you're a stupid teenager who says, I'm going outside to investigate that noise. Four or five of my friends have been killed. I better see what's going on. You stay here. Yeah, of course. Then we don't care if you get killed because you're an idiot and that's ridiculous motivation. And it doesn't make any sense. So we don't take you seriously. Well, that's exactly the situation, Mike, with wrestling. A lot of these things have no motivation or don't make sense, so we don't care.
Right, and think about it this way. I mean, your thing with the horror movies is very apt because there's a commercial for, I believe, an insurance company that's going around that's basically a rip on these horror movies where, okay, we got a number of kids, you know, doing whatever, and they're saying, okay, they're saying, well, why don't we get in this car over here and just drive away? It's running. The car's running. Let's get in the car and drive away. And the guy... And one of the kids goes, no, let's go over here and hide by the chainsaws.
Right.
You know? You know? And that's what you get with somebody. Now, you got great, pretty good horror movies, you know. You can understand why somebody in a Friday the 13th, not Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street movie doesn't want to go to sleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they don't want to go to sleep because if they go to sleep and Freddy gets in their dreams, they're dead.
Right, and that's exactly why most horror film fans will tell you the best of the series was the Dream Warriors, because common sense would tell you if you're asleep and he can do things to you in your dreams, you could do things back to him, and you don't necessarily have to be yourself in your dream. You have powers in your own dream, and that's why. It made sense, and you were like, well, that's kick-ass. That's true. There, how many people have dreams where they can run faster, lift things up, or they're this or they're that, and they're like, oh, well, this will be interesting. So all the motivation was correct. That's why it was a good movie. As soon as you lose people, as soon as you say, well, nobody would do that, or, oh, that's just dumb, or that doesn't make any sense, then you've lost the plot line. And when you've lost the plot line, you've lost your audience. So we're supposed to care about Maxine, but why? She abandoned the maximum male models who did nothing to her. So are we supposed to think that she's in love with Otis? Well, she hasn't indicated that in any way. She's given no motivation for why she left. So I could just as easily think she's a gold digger who realized the maximum male models aren't going anywhere. Alpha Academy's a step up, so fuck them, which makes her a gold digger, so why is she a face? See what I mean? The motivation doesn't make any sense. And when it doesn't make any sense, you lose your audience. Now, the WWE made a couple of mistakes this week. One of them was they had the announcer, or not the announcer, they had Paul Heyman say, this is your first, Jimmy Uso's first, or Jey Uso's first solo shot at a title. Well, did he not face Roman Reigns? Are we supposed to forget that? He faced Roman Reigns himself one-on-one. So that's not even close to true. And anybody who's been following the storyline knows it's not close to true. So once again, there you go, where revisionist history, where people say, oh, it's just ridiculous, it's not true. And what is the motivation for Jey Uso not to want Paul Heyman there? What does he think Paul Heyman did? Paul Heyman just cowers every time Roman Reigns says a word. It's not like Paul Heyman is the driving force behind it. It's not like Paul Heyman's getting in Roman's ear saying, you should do this, you should do that, and Roman is listening to him. No, Roman's barking orders at him. So what is the motivation that he doesn't want Paul there? I don't know what the motivation is. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. What would have made sense is if he said Solo has to go. Because I will never forgive him for attacking my brother. And I will never trust him, because if he did it to him, he'll do it to me. So I will not be in the same bloodline as Solo. That, Todd, would have made a lot more sense.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that angle with the bloodline says to Paul Heyman, I don't want Solo in this with us. He's not safe around people. He's dangerous to me and to himself and everybody else.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, he's the one who stabbed everybody in the back, right? So why in the world would Jey Uso figure he wouldn't do that to him, Mike?
That's the thing. I mean, if you want to be logical, which at times we all know that they've chosen not to be logical.
Right.
It cannot be argued. They've chosen it.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, Tom in the chat room was saying the WWE does this a lot. They disrespect their fans, and they do. Because what they basically say is, you're too stupid. So they don't need any motivation. We just tell you that now that this guy's a good guy, now this guy's a bad guy, now this guy likes this person that he didn't like last week, and you just got to accept it. We're not giving you a reason. You don't need a reason. Your reason is that's what we say. I don't like that. You're robbing the fans of a lot of entertainment. If I'm a writer and I go into the WWE and you tell me we want Maxine to end up with Alpha Academy, I'm like, good. This gives me months storyline to why she ends up with Alpha Academy. Not just 1 week she is and 1 week she isn't. You want to stretch out the bloodline storyline and Jey doesn't want to give his answer right away. It shouldn't be because Paul Heyman's in there. It should be because he did say, I will never forgive Solo for attacking my brother. Well, then he doesn't want to be in the bloodline with his brother then. He should say, as far as I'm concerned, you betrayed us and you do it again. So there's no way I'm going to be in the bloodline with you because you're not my blood anymore. That would have been a ooh moment, right? You see, you gotta play to the psychological. Solo is like this uncaring, unfeeling, monstrous machine who's just there to destroy. He doesn't really even care about his own goals. He's just there to help the tribal chief and destroy whatever the tribal chief points at, and emotionless, and he doesn't say much. He just folds his arms and stays with his face stoic, right? So when you want to flip him, you've got to totally do the opposite. You've got to have him literally break down and say, I turned my back on my own brothers for you, and this is how you treat me. And, you know, I lost my brothers. They won't even talk to me because of you. Then if he shows that kind of emotion, people will be like, whoa. Never saw that side of Solo before. That's how you flip somebody. Because then people sympathize with him and say, man, you know, wow. That's just the psychology of it. The WWE don't do that too much. They have Jay. They are so lucky to have Jay Uso because Jay Uso has an extremely good ability to tell a story with his facial expressions. He's better at it than maybe any other wrestler I've ever seen. And I mean that sincerely, and that is a huge compliment because there are a lot of people. There are people who are better on the mic than Jey Uso. But I don't know if there's anybody better at actually expressing their emotions on their face than Jey Uso. I don't think I've seen one. Camera always stays on him. Have you noticed that? They tell the camera, stay on Jay's facial expressions because that's telling the story. I don't think in my lifetime I've seen anybody better in professional wrestling at telling the story with his facial expressions than Jey Uso, Mike.
No, and that's what made – that's what kind of – when Sami Zayn made him and Roman break character
yes.
at one time, that's what made it so good because – as good as Roman is at telling, you know, stuff with his face, Jay's maybe three or four steps higher than Roman is. And Roman's really good at it, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, second place is probably Sammy. Sammy's good at it, too. And that's why, again, let's take that backstage moment, Mike, on SmackDown. Jay said nothing. Wouldn't that have been the spot? After he said, remember when I cracked you guys up and you didn't want to get cracked up and everything, and Jay started laughing again, wouldn't that have been the moment for Jey Uso to say, Sammy, I know what you're trying to do, and I know what you're trying to say, but here's what you never understood. I've always known that. Everything you're telling me, it's not like I didn't know from the beginning. I know you think you're trying to look after me. You're trying to give me good advice. You're trying to put some sense into my head. It's always been there, Sammy. I'm not staying with the bloodline. I never stayed with the bloodline because I thought I was being treated well. I stayed with the bloodline because they're my family. And then walk away. Because then you say, oh, I see where this is going. Jay does not want to be the one to break up the family. And he's really struggling with how can I do this? That's why when him and Sammy get together, it's gold because they're both very, very, very good at expressing their emotions. Kevin Owens is great on the mic, but his emotions are phony. When all the tag teams came through and he's like, I don't know what, everybody's standing too close to me. Nobody believes that. It's funny, but nobody believes it. It's obvious I'm doing a little act here. And it's funny, and I'm doing it for your benefit. No one believes it's really him. However, when you went to Sami Zayn and Jey Uso and they did their little skit, that sounded real. That's the major difference, Mike. So there are guys who are better on the mic, but, man, there are not too many guys who are better than those two at really seeming to express genuine emotion.
Right, and think about it this way, when Kevin Owens and was together with Jericho, and who carried that thing? It was Chris Jericho because he's another one of those guys, even at this late age, that can tell a story with his face, just his face. He don't need to talk, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, again, Jericho gets a bad rap because Jericho, people are going to say, oh, with the stupid list and the stupid thing, everybody knows that's phony. Yeah, but Jericho's gimmick is, I do a lot of this stuff because I'm just a wise ass. I like to do this stuff because this is my way of poking fun at my opponents. But if you remember, there was a great moment when him and Kevin Owens had the falling out where Kevin Owens gave him the new list, and he opens up the book and says, why is my name in this? Just a second before Kevin Owens attacks him. That was genuine. Jericho can do that when he wants to do it. He spends a lot of time trying to be funny and, you know, satirical and over the top. But if you really want him to do a serious angle, he can do it. Mick Foley was good at that. The very best promo I ever heard in my life was when Mick Foley turned heel in ECW and talked about the picture of his grandfather that was on the wall of his house and how he was told his grandfather was a hero and his grandfather had done this, that, and the other thing. And in reality, he had bombed people in the war and just killed people. And he made you believe he believed it. Whether it was just coming off the top of his head a bunch of crap or not, he made you believe he believed it. Now, there are wrestlers who can do that, but there's not a lot of them. And then there are wrestlers who don't need to do that. They just have a shtick. Like Hulk Hogan was a shtick, right? You never believed it when he said, say your prayers and eat your vitamins. You knew that was a gimmick. You knew that was just a weird thing. Or the warrior was ranting and raving. You knew that was a gimmick. Same way with Bray Wyatt. You never really think, oh, Bray Wyatt's being dead serious. No, you know he's doing a gimmick, but he's good at it. That's fine. But then there are those people who can elicit genuine emotion. And for a second, put it this way. Every single time Sami Zayn and Jey Uso come on my screen to talk, I turn the sound up. Because I want to hear everything. Because I know it's going to be important and I know it's going to be good. I don't do that for a lot of others. I think they're the best two right now in the WWE, and they may be the best two, Todd, in the WWE in the last 10, 15 years.
Oh, absolutely. Like you said, the best thing that's going on right now is the bloodline angle. And you, like you said, nobody's not doing anything else. They don't want to do anything for anybody else in angle.
Well, and we'll see if they do. But again, talking about these characters, here's Eli Drake. We all like L.A. Knight, but we know that's a shtick. We know nobody ever walks around going, yeah, and doing all, you know, we know that's a shtick. We know that that's not the real guy. We know that's a guy putting on something for us, putting on a false facade. We know The Miz is like putting on a false facade. But there are those rare people who you're not 100% sure if they're being genuine. Cody has a little bit of that, Mike.
Right. And look, there are those guys that are genuine, but here's the deal. There are those guys that are so genuine, they live their gimmick. Ric Flair. Right?
Right.
On the jet flying scene. Kiss stealing son of a gun, right? You know, and all that stuff. That was his gimmick, and it's been his gimmick. Yeah, he's been a heel and a face and all that stuff. But throughout it all, that's been his gimmick, right? You buy that because he's never changed. You know, he's never changed.
And you always
if he was
to believe
a
that Ric Flair was that guy. You know what I mean? You always sort of believe that that was Ric Flair, just maybe turned up a couple notches, but that was really him. That's a good point, too. There are guys who can do it, but even as good as Ric Flair was, and Ric Flair definitely better on the microphone than Jey Uso, but Ric Flair needed his words to express himself. Even CM Punk, as good as CM Punk is on the mic, he needs his words to express himself. Jey Uso doesn't. There are times when Jey Uso says nothing. He said nothing in the Sami Zayn skit. Not a word. And you still knew what was running through his mind. That's a gift. Honestly, it is. And Sami Zayn can do the same thing. And there's a couple other guys in the WWE, but not many. Not many at all. And that's why when these guys excel to that level, it makes everybody else look kind of weak because they can't do it. That's the problem. They can't do it. We always used to talk about the movie Under Siege with Steven Seagal, and you're like, Seagal's in the basement or in the bow of the ship kicking everybody's ass. All right? Up on the top of the ship, you got Gary Busey, you got Tommy Lee Jones, qualified actors doing all the lines. So Seagal doesn't have to do any lines. All he has to do is kick the hell out of people. And it's working because you got great acting, and then down below you got great action. But as soon as you had that scene with Steven Seagal and Tommy Lee Jones, where they had to both sort of give each other their motivation, the very first thing that you see as a viewer is, Jesus Christ, Steven Seagal can't act. Because Tommy Lee Jones is so good, that when Seagal gets to do his part, you're like, oh, Jesus. Now, if Seagal was up against some other actor who was nowhere near as good either, you'd be like, oh, it's fine. But because one is so good, it shows the weaknesses of the other that isn't. And that's the problem in the WWE. These guys, and that's why we're doing this show, the Bloodline has been so good, it shows the weaknesses of the people who can't do that. And to a certain extent, it's starting to undermine certain characters because you say, no matter what they do, we'll never care about them as much as them because they don't have the ability to express that. And that can be a huge problem once this is wrapped up, Mike.
It can be. And here's something else to think about. I give you somebody that was overrated. Underrated in what we're talking about, and this was a few years back with Mandy Rose, when the whole thing with her and Otis was going on, and Otis was like giving her hands and stuff. Go back and look at her face. She didn't need to talk. Just look at her facial reaction. You know,
right?
This guy's giving me a ham. You know, it wasn't like she was laughing at him. It was like, all right, you know,
right.
it was very good. And she could, and I believe it hurts them not having her on the roster.
Yeah, I think she was kind of railroaded. There's no question about it. And again, there are people now that don't even play their characters well. I mean, this new tag team that took on Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler, which is what can't remember what her name is now. What's Fire and whatever his name is. Anyway, both of those people are supposed to be like dark, gothic, scary. They don't remotely come across as that. They come across as two people out on trick or treat because it's probably not in them anyway. They probably were handed that character and they were just like, well, we'll do the best we can with it, but then they're no good at it. It's almost like Karrion Kross is no good at it. Bray Wyatt's very good at it. Kane was very good at being creepy. We didn't know he was very good at being funny, too, until later. But he was very good at being creepy. The Undertaker was good at it. There are people who are good at playing those creepy characters. They're not one of them. Two of them, I should say. They don't come across as that, even when they talk. You know what they come across as? They come across as like Scottish Valley girls. You're just like, okay, they're very annoying. Their voice is like nails on a blackboard. I see nothing dark or mysterious or evil or twisted about them. Alexa Bliss was good at it. She was pretty good at being creepy. They're not. So they're not going to fly in the WWE. I'm telling you right now, they're not going to go over in WWE as this because they're not any good at it. That's a problem. So once again, you see that certain people can't play certain characters, Todd, and it's obvious when you see people playing theirs so well.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, some of these characters. Look at Rosemary from Impact Wrestling. She plays her character well. Abyss, another guy,
yes.
Chris Joseph Park, who played Abyss. He did that pretty well as a monster.
Yeah, Rosemary's a great example. That whole decay was pretty good, actually, where you were literally saying, that was working for me. She definitely had the goth chops down. There's no question about that. And if you tell me, well, she's really not goth at all, and she has no real interest in that scene or whatever, I'd be shocked because she certainly seems to understand it really well, and she certainly seems to get it, where these two do not. Let's go to Tom. Tom, I can't think of their names now, but
I know
the NXT tag team.
I know who you're referring to. I can't think of their names either, but it kind of reminds me of, we have had this discussion before, of a band who they basically dress up as, you know, they call them a gothic rock band and they just dress them up to play the part. And they just, you know, they don't get it. They're just doing it for the money or the image or whatever, but playing a role. These guys don't get it. And you're absolutely right. I know who you're talking. I can't place their names at the moment because it's kind of irrelevant. Like, they didn't make any kind of impact on me. And that's why I say, like, they're kind of – they come across as annoying and not scary or intimidating.
They're intimidating. What did they do? I mean, Alexa Bliss came across as really creepy with a freaking doll that, you know, moved around and weird things happened, and she had it down. She understood how to play a creepy character. Rosemary understood how to play a creepy character. These two, Alba Fire and whatever the other girl's name is, Zyla Dawn, I think, or something, they don't. I'm sorry, they don't. They absolutely remind me, if you're into, like, the metal scene or the goth metal scene, there's this new trend where they'll just get a girl or maybe two that look like they came right off a Broadway stage. They're hot, and they dress them up like they're all goth, and they can sing really well because they're trained vocalists that sing on Broadway, and then they just back them up with a whole bunch of heavy metal-looking guys, and they sing songs that, you know, whatever, and they thought, we're goth. Nah, you're trick-or-treaters. You don't live that lifestyle. You're not about that. You're just playing a part, which is what wrestlers do, but please at least play it well. Please at least convince me. When I see some of these women that are fronting some of these supposed goth bands, I'm like, yeah, right. You know, on your spare time, you're sitting in a Broadway theater. You're not living a rock and roll lifestyle at all. At least convince me. They do not convince me. And when they talk, it's just like they're trying to – I don't know what they're trying to do. But I can tell you this. It almost made me root for Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey because I'm like, Jesus, these girls just ain't working for me, Mike. I don't think that gimmick's going to go over.
Yeah, and look, that's the thing. I mean, we love – even though she didn't fit, we love the Riot Squad, right? But
yeah.
Those three girls kind of – they were kind of a mismatch, but they kind of fit together, right? You had, the leader, punk person, all this stuff. You had the alternative girl, the crazy ass, what's her name? And then you had this other girl, which ended up being Sarah Logan. But, again, they kind of fit together. They kind of, for better or for worse, they fit together. These two girls, Isla Dawn and Alba Fire, do not fit together. I get because they don't seem to have a tie. Unlike Shayna and what's her name, we know what their ties are. We know what their ties are.
Yeah, we believe them. We believe their gimmick because they really are that. But yeah, well, the thing about the Riot Squad was together because they were misfits. It wasn't like Sarah Logan was saying, I'm going to try to be a punk rocker too. Then she wouldn't have fit. You had the clear punk rock person in Ruby Riott. You had the twisted, psychopathic sort of Harley Quinn girl in Liv Morgan. And then you had the sort of a redneck, brawling whatever in Sarah Logan. And even though they were misfits, they formed a team together, and they all played a character that was very different from each other, and so they fit in a weird way. They fit in the fact that they didn't fit, but they played their characters right. But let's say you switched it up, and you said, okay, Ruby Riott, you're going to play the redneck girl, and Sarah Logan, you're going to play the – it would never have worked. It just wouldn't work. It's very important that if you're going to have a character that's believable, I mean, how close did Sid Vicious come to being The Undertaker? You think The Undertaker would have been popular if it was Sid? Never would have taken off. Would have lasted a month or two and then buried in the annals of wrestling history. You got to find the right person for the right character. Diamond Stud, did that work? No. Was it very different than Razor Ramon? Not very, but enough so that you believed him to be this Cuban, Miami sort of, let's face it, he was supposed to be a drug dealer at first, and then they had to tone that down and make him sort of a whatever. That's what he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be like Scarface, right? The Al Pacino Scarface thing. That works. Because, man, he hit it right in the nail right on the head. You got to have the right people. These two try to act like they're two witches from a Halloween movie, and it's just not working. Alexa Bliss had it down where she was more like in a trance, sort of a, you know, she thinks she's okay. She thinks she's normal, but obviously she's not. Sort of a person. And Bray Wyatt is very good at it because he's a good actor. We all know he's acting, though. We all know it's not him, but he's very good at convincing us that, you know, he's a little bit twisted in the head. But it all goes back to if you don't really have a gimmick. Jey Uso doesn't really have a gimmick. Sami Zayn doesn't really have a gimmick. So they have to be believable. And they're very believable. Whereas Kevin Owens, who doesn't have a gimmick, I don't think he's that believable. He comes across as a guy who's doing a Saturday Night Live skit about wrestling. Now, he didn't used to be that way. When he came in originally and challenged John Cena, he was very believable. But now he seems to be more interested in doing comedic, you know, let me find something that's going to make the fans chuckle. And I don't think that should be him. I always thought he should be the real serious guy who was keeping Sammy in line. Let Sammy be a little irreverent and out there and have him be the more aggressive straight man. Okay? We talk about old television shows on here once in a while. Look at the Andy Griffith Show. When Andy Griffith first started, long before my time, obviously, I mean, you know, I grew up on reruns. But I loved the show, so I did some research, and they said originally Andy Griffith was supposed to be the funny guy. He was supposed to have all the funny jokes. He was supposed to be the sort of a smarter-than-he-appears redneck that was going to be all y'all, but he got the job done, right? And they said the minute Don Knotts showed up and did Barney Fife, they realized Andy Griffith said, we can't both be this way. One of us has to be the straight person. One of us has to be the more serious person. And that'll be me. Let Don Knotts have this because he's better at it. And he was better at it. And that's what made it. So if you were going to have that team of Sami Zayn, let Sami Zayn be the Don Knotts to Kevin Owens, Andy Griffith. And it would be a hell of a lot better than having two Barney Fifes, Mike.
Absolutely. And, you know, and here's the deal. We're talking about gimmicks versus believability. I mean, when you have a person that plays their gimmick so well that it's, you say, well, is that a gimmick or not, right?
Yeah.
And at one point, Nikki Cross had that gimmick down, right? And you can say, well, is that really Nikki Cross or is that a gimmick?
Yeah, I mean, look, even like Ronda Rousey to a certain extent, you know, you could believe that's her with just a chip on her shoulder. Brock Lesnar, we don't know how much of that's real and how much as far as his attitude and how much is put on. You know, the big rub on Brock Lesnar is he doesn't like people and he's not fan-friendly and he lives in isolation and only has a few friends. We don't know if that's true. You know, but he plays that type of guy. But we don't know. So that's the thing. If you don't have a gimmick, if you're playing an actual character like Bray Wyatt or The Undertaker or whatever it happens to be, then, yeah, you got to play that character. If you don't have one, then you've got to be genuine. You've got to make your emotions seem like you're really whoever you happen to be. That's what Mustafa Ali's problem is. He doesn't come across as genuine in anything he does. When he's a face, he doesn't come across genuine. When he's a heel, he doesn't come across genuine. When he's a leader of a team, he doesn't come across genuine. He never comes across genuine. That's what John Cena did so well. John Cena always came across as kind of genuine. And it doesn't happen much in wrestling. The WWE is lucky to have Jey Uso and lucky to have Sami Zayn. Because they're very good. But while they're very good, their performance makes other guys look a little poorer. See, that's the reference to that Under Siege thing I was talking about. When someone is that much better, Sometimes it makes you look worse. And there are guys who are not benefiting from this bloodline angle because they're so good at what they're doing that it makes some of the other people who are trying to get their own thing going look worse. Like Judgment Day, for instance. Judgment Day come out and they try to do their thing on the mic and it's like they're not even close. Not even remotely close to the bloodline. Now, Dominic doesn't have to speak on the mic because they won't let him. He has great heat. But as far as the genuine feel of this is a real group, a real, you know, together group, we've never felt that about the Judgment Day for 1 minute. We do feel Dominic and Rhea might be real. We know they're not, but we feel they might be. But never one time did this group feel like it gelled to me, Todd. It always felt like it was just a thrown-together thing.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, there are people who just get thrown together as a tag team and everything. And you know, like you said, there's so many people got thrown together. I can't name them, any of them, but there were a lot of people who have been thrown together as tag teams in the past.
Yeah, or factions, Mike, and it just doesn't work out. But, the Judgment Day is a perfect example. You can make them as big as you want to, but they're never going to garner that same feel of the bloodline because they don't gel like that.
They don't feel like that. Now, granted, if they really wanted to do something with the LWO, the LWO has that feel that it's genuine, right? Now, is that feel because it's Rey Mysterio and he's genuine about wanting to try and honor his best friend, one of his best friends in Eddie Guerrero? Yeah, probably so, but it's also genuine because you feel that there's a real respect between what's his name and Rey, you know?
Not only that, but that's why Dominic was so good with Rey. You felt it genuine. It felt like a father who was disappointed that his son had grown up that way and a son who was bitter toward his father's success that he wasn't getting. It felt genuine.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. I mean, you get these things that you make. I mean, and look, because the LWO is still getting heat, some pretty good face heat. But if they don't find them a storyline, they're not going to keep that heat. There are only a few things that can keep heat. Right now, the biggest thing that's keeping heat right now is Dominic Mysterio.
There's no question. If they don't find the LWO a storyline, that's going to fade. It's already starting to fade. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, folks, we'll be back here on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Wrestling Chat.